Hafoch ba, v'hafoch ba, dechulei ba. That's what the rabbis say about the Torah. Turn it over and over, you will find everything in it. Which is a promise that each time you read the Torah, if you read it with renewed attention, you'll see something you haven't seen before. And this week, a question occurred to me about the golden calf that really never struck me before, but seems to me a perfectly obvious question, and something that says not only something important about human nature, but about the nature of the world that we live in 2010. Because if you remember, what is it that motivated the Jews to build the golden calf, apart from memories of idolatry and fear and so on? It was that Moses was going up to the mountain for 40 days. And either they miscalculated or Moses took a little longer, but they thought that he had not come down at the end of the 40th day, and so on the 41st day, by their calculations, they built the golden calf. Now, I heard this story since I was a child, and it never occurred to me that that's really incredibly impatient. What would they have done if he'd waited till the 45th day? Would they have gone back to Egypt? They would have said, look, let's leave the mountain. Moses isn't coming down. One day later, they already violate everything that they knew. I mean, they expected him to be gone for 40 days. They couldn't wait. Someone in Israel couldn't say, look, let's give the guy a day. Maybe he got sick. Maybe he hurt himself coming down the mountain. Maybe God forgot something, called him back for a little addendum to the book of Numbers. Who knows? But really, it doesn't make sense that they couldn't wait one more day. After all, it's not like they were going anywhere. They were in the middle of the desert. They were going to be there for 40 years, although they didn't know that yet. One day more, one day less, it was not going to make a big difference. It was sort of the equivalent of the person who zooms by you when you putt, 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 and you reach them at the next red light. And you think, where were you going so fast with your Starbucks in one hand and your cell phone in the other? They were wandering in a desert, for God's sakes. They couldn't wait. And so I think in some ways the hidden sin, if you want to call it a sin, of the golden calf is impatience, which is a lack of bitachon, a lack of trust. They couldn't have the faith to wait for one more day just to see if they got it wrong, if Moses got it wrong, if something happened, if things would be all right. Now, that sense of impatience, which we all share in our lives in certain ways, is almost becoming enshrined and institutionalized in everyday life in our time. We have made of impatience a virtue. And if you don't believe me, all you have to do is give it a little bit of thought. Not just because technology depends on instantaneous response. Think of how frustrated we get if the computer is slow. Slow, by the way, means 5 seconds instead of 1 second, right? Because we are inured, we are used to instantaneous response from the things in our lives. You turn on the television, it should come on. You turn on the computer, it should get you what you want. And any lag seems like a violation of nature. Because somehow in our minds, nature and technology sort of meld. The elevator goes up, the sun rises. They sort of seem the same. They become part of our natural world. And so the computer's operations, we don't think of it as something artificial. We think of it as something natural. And it should work perfectly. But it isn't just that. The ideal of instantaneous response has found its way into our social life. Have you heard of speed dating? What is speed dating? Speed dating is make a judgment about this person in 30 seconds. It's That's what it is, right? You line up, you get, I don't know, 20 people in one circle and 20 people in another, and they have 30 seconds to sit and talk to the other person. They go on to the next one and the next one and the next one, because after all, who can't judge another human being in 30 seconds, right? It's what we do. And I can't tell you how many people have spoken to me of their pride in being able to judge people just like that. I sized him up right away. I knew exactly what he was. Which, by the way, violates two basic principles of understanding human beings. The first is that we unfold slowly. Nobody shows you themselves at first glance. Nobody. Or second or third. And all you have to do is think of anyone you know well. And you know that the person you know well is not the person you met the first time you met them. They unfolded slowly. They gave you new dimensions, different colors, different vectors, different ideas of who they are, where they've been, where they're going. And the second violation is nobody is one thing. Soon as I saw him, I knew he was a crook. Nobody is just a crook. Nobody is just a saint. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is all terrible. People are complicated. And when you take the technological ideal and you apply it to human beings, this idea of instant understanding is a travesty. Speed dating is a way of saying, I don't have the time to actually get to know people. So I'm going to make instant, superficial responses in the hope that one day I'll get to know one of them better. But realize that that's a product of a breakdown in the system. It's not a good thing. It's a response to lots of wrong things that exist in a large, atomized, alienated, isolated world, where people don't meet people organically the way they used to. And it's not only with regard to people. One of the best-selling nonfiction books of the last decade was Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. Some of you may have read it. It was all about how your instant judgments are often more reliable than your considered judgments. But of course, he's talking about the instant judgments of experts who spent years and years and years studying a particular field, so they're not really instant judgments at all. In fact, they're judgments that are backed by long study of something, and then your instant judgment of the authenticity of a statue, for example, to use one of the examples he uses, might be more reliable. But behind all of that is the capacity to pay attention. Not for an instant. Not to click from site to site to site to site, which inevitably shortens our capacity for attention. This is, by the way, to return to an old theme of mine, this is why people should be reading novels and not just looking at computers. Because you have to develop your capacity for engagement in something long and complicated that will devour your attention and pull you away from the world. Because it is too easy to get a smattering of information about lots of things instead of understanding the depth of one thing, one person, one life, one book, one work of art. But we don't have time for that anymore. I get sent sometimes these I get sent these picture tours on computer, which I rarely open, but when I do, what it is, you know, Venice in 3 minutes. And each time you hit the space bar, you get a different picture of the city. Masterpieces that took great artists their lifetime to create. Saw that one. But we should realize that breadth is actually not a substitute for depth. And seeing 30 masterpieces in 5 minutes nurtures your soul less, gives you less, educates you less, elevates you less than sitting in front of one masterpiece for 30 minutes. That's what it means to be a great work of art or a human being. It means you are endlessly unfolding new meanings and new messages. We know, by the way, that Moses had this capacity. Because when Moses goes away to Midian and spends decades in Midian and is a shepherd, one day he's walking by a bush and it says, the bush was on fire, v'hasne einenu ukal, but it wasn't burning up, it wasn't turning into ashes. And a colleague of mine once told me he sat in front of a fire once and he paid attention to how long you have to look at a fire before you realize whether it's turning into ashes or not. He said, and when I saw that, I knew that Moses didn't just glance at that bush. If he glanced at the bush, he would have seen a bush on fire and moved on. He had to pay attention to it. He had to look at it. He had to notice that something strange was going on and then sit there until he figured it out. In other words, for Moses, things in the world, as with human beings, were focuses of powerful, continuous, dedicated attention. Moses had what, when I was studying in the yeshiva, we used to call zitzfleisch, which, to translate liberally, means he could sit in one place at one time and pay attention to one thing to the exclusion of others. But with the proliferation of screens and with the superficial means of meeting people and with the constant intrusion of the external world in every part of our lives, who can do that anymore? Which means we know ourselves less well, other people less well, and the world less well. We have much more information, but less insight. Information we have lots of, but wisdom takes time. It has to be basted and nurtured and cured. It takes time. George Bernard Shaw said that the only person who really understood him was his tailor, because every time he came to his tailor, he measured him all over again. He didn't assume this was the same person I saw last time or the time before. Everybody wants to be heard. And that takes time. In the Philadelphia Story, which is a great movie if you've not seen it, and it'll take only a couple hours of your life, Katharine Hepburn famously says, the time to make up your mind about people is never. They could have waited another day to see what was going on with Moses. And then they wouldn't have built the golden calf, and paradoxically, they would have gotten to Israel sooner. They would have gotten there sooner if only they had waited. When, especially with other people, we rush to solve problems instead of understand them, to tell them what they should do instead of listening so that they can unburden themselves, we make the short road longer instead of shorter. When Moses became a judge and became the judge of Israel, do you remember what his father-in-law Yitro said to him? He said to him, you can't handle all these cases. They will overwhelm you. But what does that tell you? That until Yitro said that, Moses sat and he listened to everyone. Until he realized it was impossible to listen to everyone all the time, and he had to disperse the listening among others. But his first impulse was to sit and to listen. His first impulse was the impulse of slowness, was the impulse of quiet, was to take in what the other person had to say before he delivered whatever considered and undoubtedly wise judgment he had to render. Our prayer on the High Holidays to God is Shema Kolenu. Hear our voice. Our central prayer in the service is Shema. which means listen. Just take the time to turn off all the fancy, the attractive and seductive distractions of your life, and to pay attention to things that may not flash or spark or blink, but are deep and important and lasting. The beauty of the world, the soul of another human being. Had our ancestors thought of that at the golden calf, had they had the patience to wait, the insight to listen, we would have been spared a great tragedy. The question, of course, is not what they might have done, but what we will do. So thank you for listening. Shabbat shalom.